We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the £4 pint on match day. That's all Newcastle home games and any televised Newcastle fixture. The offer applies from midday until midnight on all draft beers. Be gamble aware, over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware, and for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk. It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle have beaten Wolverhampton Wanderers by 3-0 at St James's Park on a very wet Saturday afternoon. I'm Alex. I'm joined by Si, Kyle and Stephen, and we're going to talk about what happened and why as Newcastle get back to winning ways, at home at least, and keep a very, very valuable clean sheet. The season looks a hell of a lot brighter after this victory, and we're all absolutely buzzing. Quick one from me, we're on Patreon, between £3 and £8 a month. Loads more reaction to this podcast. We've got lots of podcasts coming up about Newcastle United, the state of Newcastle United, where they go from here, and we'll build up to Chelsea away as well. Kyle, mate, great to see you. Tell me how happy you are that Newcastle have won 3-0 at home against a Wolves side who had turned up in their previous two away games and won at Spurs and put four past Chelsea not yesterday.
Well, it's nice, isn't it? It's our first home win since mid-December, so it was good to get back to winning ways. It was a really professional performance, to be fair. It's one that we've it's one that I feel like we've missed because we've had a couple of mad home games, Luton, Forest, Bournemouth, where just the craziest things are happening defensively. It's the most un-Newcastle thing ever under Eddie Howe that we've seen in recent weeks. And yeah, it was just back to basics, I feel, yesterday, and we handled the game really well. And I know you're going to talk about how good Wolves are as a side, and they're really close to winning the table, so It's a really good win. I think it's one of them where you tick off the list and you move on, but definitely a performance to appreciate for sure. We're really happy with the result.
It was just really, really important, wasn't it? The sense of relief that we got at the end of the Blackburn game was carried over and multiplied by about 10 here, because I think after the FA Cup draw this week, I mean, the draw itself has caused a meltdown and the attitude of, oh, that's the season over, then it's done for. So we really, really needed to come and win some games of football to kind of remind everyone, oh, now there's plenty to play for. So this result and the performance and the clean sheet and everything that comes with it is actually really, really important for kind of the feeling and the mood going into the next few fixtures. And you know what? If we can take that performance and the result into the next couple of games, then and win at Chelsea and you know, you start thinking, well, maybe the Etihad isn't a total write-off. So yeah, I think that was a huge, huge result. Really important to see the lads back to kind of clean sheet dominant performances. And yeah, absolutely class. I was relief, probably an understatement. I was really pleased, really happy.
I'm going to say that I agree entirely with most of what I said. Entirely, so I can't say that now. I agree with most of what Si just said. Was it really important to win? Yes, it was. Was it great to get a clean sheet? Yes, it was. We've basically played two or three basketball games at home in the past few weeks where we've allowed teams to have as much of the ball as they want. And then we've thought, oh, well, we'll score two. You're not going to score. Oh, you have scored two. All right. Oh, we better go and try and score again. Oh, wait, now we're 4-2 down. And we've had to react to those. And I think a lot of us said after Luton, when we got back to 4-4, it looked like we were the only team going to go and win that game. And actually, they probably had the best chance of the injury time. I thought Wolves were the better side until we scored. I thought Wolves kept the ball, moved us around. They had five across midfield with the two wing-backs, for me, causing quite a lot of issues for us because we're so narrow in midfield. And Alex, I think you've said a couple of times, it's like you could throw a mat over our three in midfield and say they're not going to move from that area. But we seem to adapt mid-game, and that first goal just seemed to change everything. We caught them on the counter. It's a brilliant ball from Fabian Schär. Like, to, in his own box, to look up and see he's got a 30-yard pass on Anthony Gordon and played in perfectly to his feet is fantastic. But for me, there's an element of a little bit, and this is going to sound like I'm being madly depressive, and I'm not, but like there's a little bit of it papers over the cracks because Pedro Neto wasn't fully fit. So if he was fully fit, I think he has a bit more of a go at Dan Byrne. Was there extra protection in for Dan Byrne? Yeah, there was. At Blackburn, I thought we were horrendous at moving the ball. Like, horrendous. We moved it a lot better, but the manager was out after each goal. First one, he pulled Schär over. Second one, he pulled Botman over, like, having a word with him about, like, right, the ball needs to move quicker. Because clearly that was his comment, that the ball wasn't moving fast enough. And we were much better in the second half. We were much, much better in the second half, I thought, because we controlled the game a lot better. But I still have concerns that if we try and play like that against a team with a bit more confidence in themselves, and bear in mind, they scored four at Chelsea, but the guy who got a hat-trick wasn't there. Neto went off at half-time. Saar went off at half-time. Like, they lost probably their two best players of the first half that they went off. If we try and play like that, if we're 1-0 down, do we react in the same way? Because not every week is Jacob Murphy going to put in the perfect cross that a keeper just spills at the feet of, like, one of our players and taps it in for 2-0. And I think if it had been 1-0 in 85 minutes, we'd have been a lot more nervous.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I thought Wolves were okay. You know, I think if you look at the balance of the game, 3-0 is probably a little harsh. But also, then if you look at the expected goals, Newcastle over 3, Wolves are under 1. And Martin Dubravka has a couple of saves when Wolves have like a real 10-minute spell in the second half where they really push them back. But I don't think Wolves had a shot on target until the 65th minute. Wolves had 67% of the ball in the first half and didn't produce a chance of note or a shot on target. I agree with you that long term, this isn't the solution, playing like this. We played like the 2022 version of Newcastle under Eddie Howe when we surged away from the relegation zone, where we'd basically play, Eddie Howe calls it a transitional game. I'd call it, because I'm old, younger than Eddie Howe, but not as football savvy, obviously, as him. We played counter-attacking football. We basically said, break us down if you can, we're going to remain compact, and then we've got the quality and the pace to punish you if you overcommit, which you will, moving forward. But it's okay, though, because we don't need, and maybe we're all guilty of this, we don't need to find long-lasting solutions every single game, particularly when there are still so many mitigating factors. You know, Sandro Tonali's not there, Drillinton's not there, Nick Pope's not there, Callum Wilson's not there. Big players unavailable still to this squad overall. Sometimes it's just good to find a solution for that game, and I quite like that. And what I thought about this game is it makes the Arsenal game look a tiny bit better, because after the Arsenal game, I didn't do this podcast, but after the Arsenal game, a lot of Newcastle fans were quite rightly asking, forget about what they did, what were they trying to do? Because we don't know, because it looked like a Steve Bruce go out there, keep the score down, lads. Well, I think now what they were trying to do is what we did yesterday, get the midfield, or basically get a flat five in front of the back four, not leave much space between those lines, and hit Arsenal the counter-attack. The difference is Arsenal, much better team than Wolves, and we conceded a soft set-piece goal, which basically rendered that game plan useless. So you're right, Stephen, I agree. That game plan we saw yesterday is fine if it's 0-0. and you're not 1-0 down, because it becomes very hard, doesn't it, to get back in and then leave yourself potentially exposed trying to get back into the game. But I don't think we'll have to worry too much about all this as Newcastle fans. Possibly we don't need to worry for the rest of the season about getting back to what we saw for large spells earlier this season, but last season in particular. It's all about just finishing as high as possible in the league this season. And we don't need to worry about next season as much as maybe some people are. Let's just get through these fixtures. Let's just win some games. Let's have some nice afternoons like we did, and we'll all go home happy. And ultimately, that's why we all do this. We don't have to find, and I don't think Howe has to find, the perfect solution to make Newcastle a top four side once again this season anyway. So I'm really impressed that Howe did what he did, and maybe we'll talk about that later in the show. But I'm just, like you said, Si, just happy that we've gone pump Wolves 3-0, essentially, and as the fact that Wolves were okay, there was mitigation for Wolves. They're missing a lot of players. They had players go off. You know what, lads? If we want to talk about luck and rub of the green, Newcastle's goalkeeper fell over last home game under no pressure and gifted Bournemouth a goal. So in terms of who deserves a little bit of luck in those circumstances, I'd say Newcastle did. And just to build up the opposition a bit more, the last time Newcastle won a home game with 11 men was December the 2nd against Manchester United. Against 11 men. That was the last time Wolves lost any away game. It was December the 2nd at Arsenal, and it was a tight game at that. So Wolves are a serious side away from home. It's Wolves' home form, actually, that lets them down a little bit, because the way Wolves play at home is they don't have as much of the ball. And ever since Wolves had, since that December the 2nd, every single game Wolves had won away from home, they'd had significantly less of the ball than their opposition. And Howe managed to flip that on its head yesterday, and it worked out really nicely and really well. Any other thoughts on just what it was like, lads, to win again?
According to Gary O'Neill, they had loads of the ball yesterday because that's how good they are. It's not because we flipped it on its head and kind of played them at their own game. Yeah, I think, Stephen, I think you did a little bit of disservice to Wolves. I thought they were a good side. You know, they're better than Luton, they're better than Bournemouth, they're better than Forest, and we've beat them 3-0. Like, I think that's a good result. Maybe it does paper over some craps from this season. But if that performance continues, then that's fine. I think finding a new way to play has been overdue, and you know, he's found that solution. And I just thought everything about that performance was miles away from what we've seen in many times this season. I thought the defence was the best it's been, and very solid and very comfortable. I thought we handled them really well. Like you say, all right, they only had one fit forward, and it was Neto, and he went off at half time, so was he even fit? Mm. But we handled him reasonably well. He didn't do anything. He was getting forced wide, and Dan Byrne kind of, I think he only got beat by him once, and kind of did an absolutely fine job on him. I thought the midfield, that's the best midfield performance we've had in like about 6 months. And yes, all right, Joe Willock's back, and that kind of brought new levels out of Bruno and Longstaff. But I just thought throughout the team, that was just the best we've played in ages. And surely that's going to give them confidence and a bit of momentum. It's not going to be a bit of that was a one-off. Then again, we had that game at Villa and then didn't quite kick on from there. So hopefully this is the one we do get a bit of a kick on from.
Yeah, sorry, I am maybe being overly depressive after a 3-0 win. But it's more the fact that, a bit like you said there, Si, there's kind of been this idea of a false start. Like with Villa, I loved the Villa game. Like, did not see it coming at all. Whole way down to Birmingham, I was thinking, why am I doing this? And then to win that game was brilliant. But then we came back up against Luton. We're like, right, okay, this is it. Like, we can start. And we didn't. Hmm. Now, we've now got, what, 8-9 days before Chelsea. We've got to set up with a potentially a little bit of a different game plan. Maybe that game plan does work away at Chelsea, but maybe it's going to have to be slightly different because they're a little bit of a basketball team as well. They concede a lot of goals, and they seem to hit teams on the counter a lot. I agree with you. I thought our defence looked far more solid. I'm still slightly worried about how fit Sven Botman is, only because there's a reason why he went off against Arsenal, and although he's having a poor game, I still am slightly concerned that he's not 100% right.
Much better yesterday.
Yes, though. I was going to say, he was much better yesterday. And Livermento came off the bench to brilliant effect. And one other person I want to pick out who got a lot of stick pre-kickoff for being in the team, just for being named in the team, Jacob Murphy. Like, Miguel Almiron can't do the cross Jacob Murphy does the second goal. Yes, I know the keeper drops it, but with Miggy, he's cut back and he's trying to hook it in with his left foot, and we don't score. Like, we just don't score. And Jacob Murphy makes that goal.
We'll leave it there for part one. Couple of adverts coming up. You know how to get rid of them. Join us on Patreon between £3 and £8 a month. You get all of these free podcasts, advertisement free. And we'll be back after these.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We have to talk about Joe Willock yesterday. Back in the team, just a second league start of the season. Kyle, you are absolutely buzzing, aren't you, mate?
I am. I mean, he's been one hell of a miss, hasn't he? There's been so many games over December and in November where you'd think, my God, I wish we had Joe Willock in this team, because he just brings that energy. There was a couple of instances in the first half, he just drives forward with the ball and it's just like, thank you, we've been waiting for this. And it's like no disrespect to Miley or Longstaff or any like the midfield who's played, but I don't think they have the energy that Willock can bring to a team. He's brilliant going forward, but it wasn't just going forward, it was defensively as well. He managed to give Dan Byrne protection that I don't think he's had in a while, and it's all good and well slating Dan Byrne, and he has been at fault for a lot of the goals, but at the same time he did get that protection yesterday. And I know we've mentioned that Wolves weren't full strength, but defensively, to say a clean sheet over the past couple of months is it's nice to see, because we've been even the Premier League have posted stuff like, oh, Newcastle are so entertaining to watch when you see the amount of goals we've conceded. It's just nice to see a professional performance, and I think that comes from Joe Willock. Defensively, as I mentioned, he's played really well, but going forward, his passing's severely underrated. There's a ball that he plays to the outside on the left-hand side in the second half. It's just unbelievable. Like, it's up there with Bruno's pass, the no-look pass that he ended up doing. It was absolutely brilliant, and I think the relationship that Isak and Willock have in particular, where the link up in games, and it is something that I think quality wise can see throughout the rest of the season, because it's just something a bit different. Because I know there was arguments online of why Longstaff started, Miley didn't, or whatever it may be, but Willock really carried that midfield along with Bruno yesterday, and it didn't require such a performance from Longstaff or Miley or whatever to carry that midfield. But Joe Willock yesterday was unbelievable. Two key passes, which is good for a midfielder, his quality. But then driving runs forward, it allowed Bruno to play more, it allowed Gordon to play more. So long may it continue. Hopefully he can stay fit, and it's a good thing for midfield, especially when we win the ball high up, because Willock can punish teams with his pace.
He was really unlucky not to score as well, wasn't he? The header, if he'd got as much on it as he did at Arsenal, it's a goal, but the defender lying on the floor seems to block it. I think the main thing I'll pick up on there that I totally agree with is kind of relationship with Isak, and his relationship with the other members of the team. Like, they just trust him, and they know where he's going to be, and they know they can play in the ball under pressure or not under pressure, or they know where he's going to run. I think, for everything, Miley and Longstaff work hard and do a lot of running. When they play Bruno the ball, he knows they're not going to be running somewhere into space to get the ball back. They don't really want the ball back, and I just like that. I think there was one moment in the game that kind of made this point perfectly for me. It was actually in the first half. We're shooting towards Gallagher first half, weren't we? First half, there was a moment when Isak gets the ball on the halfway line, he sets Murphy away. And it's kind of a foot race, and Murphy gets the ball first, but no one believed he was going to get the ball first because everyone else is still stood on the halfway line. Whereas if Willock's running with the ball, everyone trusts him and everyone's up with him because they know that he's probably going to get the ball and he's going to be able to deliver a pass or kind of cut back and give us the ball. So that trust in your teammate kind of drives the entire team forward of kind of, right, well, if we're giving the ball, something's going to happen, so we should get up with him. Whereas I think that one moment where Isak released Murphy, it was like, you're on your own, mate. If you get the ball, well done, but we're not going to bust a gut to get you because you're probably not going to keep the ball. And it was that weird kind of contrast of whenever Willock's got the ball, players are bombing on around him. Dan Byrne's getting forward past him because something's going to happen because he's got the ball, and that's something we've lacked so much. And yeah, he was huge.
The second goal, I don't think another midfielder creates that goal. His movement across the halfway line to come and get the ball. Mm. He's watched the ball like move across the shirt right side of centre half, and he runs, I reckon, 20, 25 yards across, or maybe 30 yards across the pitch to come and get it. Turn, play a first time ball into Jacob Murphy. I don't think even Bruno, who I think is excellent, I don't think he makes that run because I think he's so worried about sitting in front of our back foot. And I think that's the difference with Willock. He's got a brain that says, not saying that other people don't have brains, but he's got a brain that is totally thinking, right, how can I help my team out here and get us further forward up the pitch? He is not thinking, oh, I better worry about this marker here. He's prepared to run with the ball. He's prepared to make movement to get into space. And then when he gets into space, he gives it straight away.
I really like the fact that he's quite a stroppy player. A bit like Drillit and Tonali, Bruno players of that quality that you'd expect. Alexander Isak's a big one for this as well. When they make runs and don't get the ball, they're not happy. That doesn't mean they should always get the ball. It was the right pass. But again, compared to what we've seen, and Bruno having to play such a limited role in an attacking sense compared to what he was before, midfield injuries, fatigue, and the threat of a two-game suspension, it's a long time since I've seen someone so unhappy so often with his teammates for not giving him the ball whenever he wants it. It's that kind of, I don't think it's arrogance, but it's like, you know, hyper-confidence because he knows what he can do. He wants the ball. He wants to affect the game all the time. When Newcastle were static from throw-ins, which there were a lot yesterday, Joe Willock was bollocking teammates, telling people to move. When people played a pass he didn't agree with, even if it wasn't to him, he would tell them where he thought the ball should have gone. Little things like that we've missed because Miley's too young and to do stuff like that to teammates, and Longstaff just doesn't really want the ball in tight situations or doesn't dictate to his teammates like that for whatever reason. So that was nice to see yesterday. We've got a player in there who is kind of managing the game a lot. And other good midfielders, all great midfielders, will do that at any team. But it's been really noticeable, not just how bad Newcastle have been in midfield, but there's just no confidence there. There's no confidence to kind of tell teammates what to do or what they should have done. And I imagine, therefore, he's quite a strong voice in the dressing room because if he's like that on the pitch, I imagine he's going to be like that in the dressing room as well. So massive, and we should touch on Dan Burn. When the team sheet came out, I thought, very strange decision, purely because Livramento comes in for Arsenal, the game I thought we needed Burn for the set-piece threat, and then has dropped for the next two games. It seemed an odd one. But with Joe Willock in yesterday, not only was Burn more effective from a defensive position, he got forward in that game yesterday way more than I've seen him in recent months. I haven't seen the extended highlights on the club's YouTube channel, but on the kind of other YouTube highlight packages that are available, Burn's chance doesn't even make it. The finish is so bad when he drives into the box. But the fact that he was there and in space and made the run is just something he hasn't done in months. So he obviously feels a lot more confident that whatever happens behind him, Joe Willock's recovery pace on that side is going to help him out, and he doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, kind of stationary at left back all the time. So that was really positive. And Newcastle, that left side now of Burn, Gordon, Willock, we loaded the left side loads last season, and the right side is good as well, but Longstaff, Trippier, and mostly Alan Rom, but Murphy just doesn't have the same kind of quality to it as the other side, and it just kind of, even though it's one result and one win, it just makes a lot more sense. Again, you can see what the purpose is, whereas those basketball games that you described them, Audie, it didn't make any sense to have Dan Burn in those games. Those games and the styles and patterns of play just didn't suit him, whereas what you saw yesterday from Newcastle, even if this is to be Dan Burn's left season as first choice left back, I've got no idea. At least I think fans can say, all right, well, that's the plan. This is how it's supposed to make sense. If it doesn't go right, that's okay. We can see what you're trying to do. Previously, that wasn't the case. So a big day, really, for the left-hand side yesterday. One return of one very good footballer, and all of a sudden, how looks like a better manager.
I think bar the chance, which I'd completely forgotten about, but yeah, that was bad. He just drags it so far wide, doesn't he? It looked like a really big chance from where I was in the East Stand. I saw some real confidence and a reminder that he's actually good on the ball, Dan Burn. He is good with his feet. He can control the ball. He can pick a pass, and he's got a football brain. He will pick the right pass and do the right thing. Yeah, he's been playing with a lack of confidence, and we know his pitfalls in terms of his pace against the pacey winger. Now, I feared the worst when Neto just kept coming to the right-hand side. He kept coming out and just doubling up on the left-back. And I thought, to be fair, Botman protected him a lot better. I thought they were working together really well. But yeah, Burn on the ball when we're at home is absolutely fine. And yeah, if we're going to play against it, and I'm not going to call Wolves a lesser team this season because they're pretty much around us, but against a side that you want to break down and score goals against, you need him to get forward, and that's what he did. And if he's going to give us performances like that, I absolutely back him being chosen at left back. Obviously, Tino comes on and sets the world alight again, but he is a right back, and you know, maybe that's why he doesn't always get the nod for left back. It's not his natural position. So I mean, it all worked out.
Dan Burn's a centre back, mind.
Yeah. Well, I'll describe him as a defender, left centre. He can, but he's left footed, isn't he? He's more naturally able to play on the left, in my opinion. But yeah, I thought one of his better games, definitely, and looked really, really composed on the ball, which is something that you kind of forget. He is a decent footballer.
Isak goes nuts. He doesn't square that ball. He goes absolutely nuts. I thought Dan Byrne was much improved. But again, sorry, with the caveat that Willock and Gordon had both been told you don't need him one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And you could see Gordon at one point is just jogging back, suddenly realises the ball's going out to the right, and he sprints back into like the sort of just in front of the left back. And Howe and Tindall were losing their head a little bit in the second half with people not making this, like Barnes not making the same run to cover back in, even though we were 2-0 up. I do think there was a more rigid structure to that left-hand side, which I do think makes a difference. We're all going to say it, probably, with Mr. Linton, but like he has made a massive difference to how strong we look on that left-hand side, because people can't just bully boy past him and then get on to Dan Byrne. But Joe Willock like has played absolutely brilliantly there. He was brilliant there the game when we beat Spurs 6-1. That is his natural position. I think it throws us another curveball of what's our best three in midfield for next season, because now we've got Willock back and we say we're missing Joe Linton and we say we're missing Tonali and can't play all of them if we're only playing three in midfield.
Hey, we've got a 38 million quid Harvey Barnes who... Yeah. It doesn't look like Howe's going to play, move Gordon on the right, as people assumed. He was just a backup, unless Gordon gets injured. I thought Bruno Guimaraes was excellent yesterday. I think that his role in the first goal, ultimately it's his assist, his role in the first goal is crucial. I think a lot of midfield players, particularly creative players like him, would see the ball go out to Anthony Gordon, is it? And think, all right, over to you, Gordon and Isak. 2 against 3. You're the fast lads. You'll be able to sort this out. Not Bruno. Sprints very, very hard. Realises that an extra man makes all the difference in that pattern of play. And there's a little bit of luck there with the deflection to Alexander Isak. But it's a desperate slide from the defender to try and stop the cross. That's going to happen occasionally when you're caught out of position as much as you are. And then towards the end of the game, when things were just kind of drifting a little bit, Wolves really threw caution to the wind. Dubravka make some saves. I think Bruno kind of stepped up his own game then and realised that he needed to get the crowd going. He needed to get his foot in despite the threat of the yellow card. And he just kind of, as much as the last goal, as the Shaw to Tino pass and finish and run, which is great, I just think Bruno kind of recognised game management that we haven't really seen. He didn't just let the game drift towards a 2-0 win. He was like, no, we need to kind of step up the intensity here for this last 10 minutes. And then the main difference for me is, look at all these games. I include Blackburn in normal time as well. Newcastle have been getting worse at the end of these games against Bournemouth, against Luton in particular, against Forest. They just drift through against Man City. There's kind of only one team going to score, or even against the lesser sides, the other teams look as likely to score as Newcastle. Newcastle actually finished that game more strongly than Wolves once we got into the last kind of 5-10 minutes, and that was really positive for me.
Yeah, I think Bruno made 4 or 5 like really key tackles and interceptions, despite, like you say, this whole yellow card hanging over him. It's like you can't really make tackles, but he just backed himself to just get the ball. There was no fouls. It was just, you just won the ball. But yeah, just quickly on the no-look pass that Kyle mentioned before, like, it's not really a no-look pass. Like, if you watch the footage back, he's watching Miggy for about 10 seconds, then does it at the last second, looks away. It's like, well, he knows where he's passing the ball. It's not really a no-look pass, but it's just the kind of silly flair that he has, which I love. And that just shows confidence, because he knew he was running that game. He knew he was running the show, and that was massively important. And yeah, you can't praise Willock without praising Bruno, because they were both at the top of their game yesterday.
They're brilliant, and I think that's the caveat you can go with, because I think I posted on my own socials yesterday, like, when Bruno plays well, Newcastle do, and I think he's very much the heartbeat of that team. As you mentioned, Alex, 10 minutes to go, Newcastle severely drop off in games, especially recently. Bruno took that game by the scruff of the neck and was like, we're winning this game comfortably today. And he caused opportunities, made important interceptions, as Si has mentioned. And for me, that it just shows what kind of a player we'll have. And if he leaves in the summer, how much we're going to miss him, because I don't think my heart could take it. Yeah, it's a brilliant performance from Bruno yesterday and Willock as well.
Just quickly on the subs as well, then, because like 70 minutes and we were able to take Isak off and we were able to take Willock off, who both, you want them to complete 90 minutes, but it's good that we'll be able to rest them, because the game felt like it was won. That said, Wolves were starting to get a bit of an impetus in the game. We're starting to, force some saves. I don't think they were saves that any keeper shouldn't be making. I thought Dubravka makes some saves that, you know, that were needed, but absolutely should be making. Then we make three subs, and it felt like we got the game back under control, and that's, again, how it's supposed to have been this season, with that bench, with Barnes, with who else came on? Miley, that's how you're supposed to use a young player like Miley. He's supposed to be coming on to a game when we're 2-0 up and kind of helping us see it out, getting a bit of experience, not being made to play 90 minutes for 3 months straight. So yeah, I thought that, and Miggy came on and gave us a bit more energy and outlet, and kind of the like for like sub you get from Miggy for Murphy, although I agree you wouldn't have been able to put that cross in. He gave us something else in terms of runs in behind and kind of pushing them back again, because they were getting a bit more on us. So yeah, I thought that's how that triple sub's supposed to work. It was perfect, and it kind of got us right back in control of the game, where, like I think you said before, Alex, we finished the game more strongly than they did, despite the fact that we're 3-0 up.
I'm going to have to be honest and say, excuse me, when those subs were made, I was furious that Gordon wasn't taken off, because he looked absolutely knackered. And I thought, what on earth is he doing here, leaving Gordon on for another 90 minutes? Because it's almost asking for Gordon to get injured. And I was proved massively, massively, massively wrong. Because Gordon just suddenly seemed to find a second wind and was absolutely brilliant the last 20 minutes.
I'll be positive and say we're talking about subs again.
Yeah.
Amazing. Substitutions are so underrated.
Matt Ritchie isn't one of them. it was a marked improvement, like you say. Actually, I looked at the bench before the game, and actually every single one of those players you would say could play in the Premier League. And when was the last time we could say, right, the entire bench, maybe apart from Carlos.
Do you not miss three goalkeepers on the bench?
But like it's such a change, like from early December when we were going, who's that? Who is this coming off the bench? Like, it's such a change, and that is a real positive. If we can get one or two more, if Matt Target's supposedly going to come back fairly soon, if Nick Pope's going to come back hopefully this month, like, what a difference that could make to us towards the running.
Yeah, massive difference. And the subs thing is interesting, because I thought that Howe made his triple change yesterday. I mean, being able to make a triple change is pretty good. When Wolves were on top, and that's, like you say, the ability to think, okay, let's give them something to think about. Let's change things from their perspective. Some new challenges that kind of changed the game. We'll still have a little bit of possession, a few chances after that. But yeah, you know, maybe Eddie Howe isn't a bad manager. Maybe he just needs the scantest of resources in terms of a match day squad to be able to affect games and to be able to see games out, which they did yesterday. We're going to leave it there for part two of the show. We're coming back with part three after these. Speak to you in a sec. I want to talk a little bit more about what Eddie Howe achieved in terms of the change of setup. Same formation, but out of possession. This is all about out of possession, really. Newcastle make it very difficult for the opposition, whereas in the months previously, it's been very, very easy for teams to play through our midfield, get either to the edge of our penalty area or into our penalty area with the ball and create big chances inside the box. And that has just been the opposite of what Newcastle were, not just the whole of last season, but also nearly all of the home games this season up until that Nottingham Forest game. So it's not true to just say that there's kind of been a seasonal shift. There's lots of reasons for it. Howe, in recent press conferences, has absolutely shot down the idea of a formation change, shot down the idea that they have to change anything system-wise. And although Newcastle still line up with what someone like me would look at and say is 4-3-3, they definitely played a flat five in front of their back four yesterday to make it more difficult for Wolves to just pass through them. And Wolves did still get their attacking players behind Newcastle's midfield and in front of Newcastle's back four. And they did sometimes get the ball. And there's a few times in the first half when Wolves worked the ball really nicely out to their right, down Newcastle's left. And then the final ball is poor, or Newcastle just get a block in, or Martin Dubravka claimed quite well. So it's not all as well. Teams are still doing it in Newcastle. But what the beautiful thing about yesterday, Newcastle's ability to counter-attack kind of proved to Wolves, yeah, you can try and play the ball through us, but if it doesn't get there, we're going to hit you. And then we scored twice from almost that situation. So game plan wise, from Eddie Howe, absolutely perfect. You referenced Gary O'Neill's comments, Si. It's just complete delusion from him. Newcastle clearly changed the way that they played yesterday. We still, at times, pressed high, particularly when Wolves have the ball in their own final third. But when Wolves have the ball in midfield, gone are the days of players running out of position, being passed through. Gone are the days of the back three or the middle three being totally flat, being kind of almost stood next to each other. And it was a way more dynamic a way to approach that fixture against that opposition. Like we said earlier in the show, it might not be the long-term solution for Howe wants to play, but it's the solution that he needed right now. So that's really positive. Si, one of the impacts that only having 33% of the ball has on a crowd, particularly before the first goal, is it's harder to stomach. There's less to shout about. As much as I am pleased, I'm sure you're all pleased that Howe found that solution for that game yesterday, you were very disappointed with the way that the crowd reacted.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't just a general whinge about the crowd because, you know, it's been flat at times this season. And you know what? If it's flat at home to Nottingham Forest at 12 o'clock on Boxing Day, that's understandable. You know, everyone's got a bit of a Christmas hangover and it was quiet and then the performance was shocking. And yeah, that's not what I'm talking about here. I think you expect it to be flat against a mid-table team on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. It's never going to be raucous. It's never going to be PSG at home. But I feel like, the way that we approached that game and certainly the first 15, 20 minutes when... I wouldn't say Wolves were on top, but it was a very even game and they'd had kind of the only half chance. And until we scored, it was very, very, very nothingy. And it creates a bit of frustration. And I know we've had a very frustrating season. And I was at Blackburn. I got a little bit annoyed at this as well because some of the people around me were being very negative and very critical of the players. And it's like, well, that's not helpful. You know, when you're in the stadium, get behind them or just keep quiet if you don't want to sing because it's Saturday and it's early, whatever. But I just thought... I was sat in the East Stand yesterday and it's the first time I've kind of appreciated that if you're close to the pitch and you start shouting critical things, the players can actually hear you. So there was two occasions yesterday where I heard comments being made and then I saw a reaction from the players. There was one in the first half where I think someone just shouted, "Get Miggy on!" And then Murphy turned and looked at them and was like, "What, you mean for me?" And it's like, that's really awkward. Like, it's like, that's not, he's basically sitting there with the crowd telling him they want someone to come on for him. And then there was another one second half where I think it was Gordon plays the ball, like a ridiculously hard pass at Longstaff that he's got no chance of getting and it's like 3 yards to the side of him. And then you hear a comment and then Longstaff looks at him and goes, "What the fuck am I meant to do with that man?" It's like, you should never have that situation where the players feel like they've got to turn to the crowd and kind of respond to a comment. Like, I think that's the frustration we've built up over the last 3 months. Because yes, December was bad and you know, we've had a very shaky season and... It's not like last year where just everyone's on the same page and everyone's absolutely buzzing. There are things to get frustrated about and there are questions being asked and you don't agree with everything the manager's doing. You don't agree with everything the players are doing. But it's boiling over a little bit and I just think it's not the same environment that we're giving our players that we did last season that pushed us on so many times. So I just thought that was interesting. You know, I get why people are frustrated. This hasn't been the best season. There's been loads of problems, you know, with loads of caveats as well, which we've talked about to death. But... it's the first time I've kind of realised that if we're going to be really kind of critical and awkward inside the ground, it might impact the players more than we realise.
That Longstaff issue, I reared its head because a couple of people in front of me got really angry with people having a go at Gordon and Longstaff over that. I think Gordon sprints back like 20 yards to the ball back.
It's his recovery to make. He's made the mistake.
Yeah, and there's loads of people who are then up going, "Oh, you're not slagging him now, are you not?" Like, and it's...
Yeah, people start arguing with each other as well. It's not healthy.
And I think probably part of that comes out of, a bit like you say, the frustration side, but also because of this idea that maybe the season isn't supposed to be like this. We're supposed to be really, really good now and Wolves at home should just be a walkover. And like, games in the Premier League are hard.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where people have been for the past 15 years, but we don't steamroller teams at home. Like, this is new. Like, enjoy it. Because like, we weren't doing this. Like... I was talking to someone the other day about my son, like when I took him to the Southampton game under Bruce and we scored in the 91st minute. Like, and he was buzzing. He was like, "Yes, I'm going to see my first win." 4 minutes later, there's a penalty at the other end. I was like, so I think it's really important that we get back to a position where these do become routine, but that the atmosphere doesn't become too negative on the players. He says, ironically, as he started off very depressively on this. But like, The thing is, you're right, in the stadium, you've got to be getting behind them and you've got to try and not let your frustrations get the better of you. Tuesday night was very frustrating, but it was more frustrating because you know the players can play better than they were, not because you don't think the players are up to it. I'm also going to say that it seems to be a lot easier to slag off Sean Longstaff and slag off Dan Byrne, local lads. People seem to find that perfectly easy. But when Bruno's having a bad game and people say, "Oh, that wasn't Bruno's best game," you can't say that. He's the best player ever. So... maybe there is a level of bias whereby, like, it is where the people who it's aimed at maybe are a little bit easier targets, possibly. than others.
It's a sort of a natural foot. It's almost a cliche of a football thing. You need a scapegoat. You need kind of it's going to be your lesser players who, when things are going wrong, you need someone to blame. And I get that, and people are entitled to kind of get frustrated and try and find a way to direct it. But yeah, just those players in particular, like you said, Dan Byrne was probably getting a bit of stick as well. I didn't have a specific example, but we know that they're probably the quote unquote weaker links at the moment. You know that Longstaff's been in poor form, Dan Byrne's been in poor form, but griefing them isn't going to help. Like, that's not going to make them play any better. I'm talking about a real minority. I need to be clear, but I just think the overall kind of mood change of the stadium is noticeable now, and I think and hopefully a 3-0 win will help with that, because it got better as the game went on, obviously. But I think we just need to remember that the players rely on the crowd for a bit, and Bruno does this every week. He wants to see a bit more. He wants to see some energy and positivity, and it's just a funny one that I picked up on yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's something I did notice just before half time, where it was like, it felt the only time I've seen it quieter was like for minute silences and stuff. It was really quiet, like just before half time, and I get it, people are going like for drinks and whatnot, but like
to get out the rain as well.
Yeah, it was just really it's really bizarre. But audience side says we need to get behind the team. It is a minority, as mentioned, but hopefully we've turned a corner. I've said that a few times this season, and we've usually hit a brick wall not long after it. So, but this time, hopefully, we can start getting some results. And because obviously, the frustration stems from the season it's been. It's just been a mental season with cup draws going against, where injuries, all these caveats that we've talked about all season. But yeah, hopefully with the less fixture congestion and easier running, we can really get it about win and end the season on a high. Despite it being a frustrating season, hopefully there's a couple of memories still to be made.
The reason players can hear that criticism size is because the rest of the ground's quiet. I think always going to get in football grounds people kicking off at footballers, just part of whether you're Arsenal, whether you're Liverpool, whether you're Man City, it still happens. But there was kind of some discussion yesterday online anyway about the atmosphere, and the club are hosting one of their fan engagement atmosphere events, and so at least, you know, there's some feedback being taken on there. However, I'll always say that fixing atmospheres at football grounds isn't hard. You just need to have the will to do it. You're going to have to upset some people to do it. But ultimately, if you made the Gallagher end all safe standing, invited people to apply there who wanted to stand and wanted to sing, fixed. It's fixed. Like, it might not fix the whole ground, but right now, where I am in the corner, so I thought the atmosphere was decent yesterday because I'm in the corner and it was loud all game.
Yeah.
But the rest of the ground obviously isn't like that. You just need to get the people who want to make a noise together. When we go to Paris, Milan, and Dortmund, and we're in awe, or I was certainly in awe of the atmospheres in those grounds, they just do the simple thing of getting everyone together in the same place who wants to make a noise. And that doesn't mean the rest of the ground is quiet. It just means not everyone who wants to go to a football game wants to stand up. Not everyone who goes to a football game wants to sing songs in support of the team. It's quite an obscure thing, isn't it, outside of sport and outside of football, that you'll create, you know, sing kind of lyrical, jovial songs to get behind your team. Not everyone's like that. And if the club long-term, either in this stadium or if the move, can accept that, then they can fix the atmosphere.
Can I make one further suggestion that all the people who want to stand up and make a scene and grief an individual player, stick them all in level 7 as well, right? Put them all together, because then they'll all look at each other and applaud each other. Because I think some of them just shout out stupid stuff to get a bit of a reaction from the people around them. It's like, hey, look what I just said. There was one at Blackburn, it's like, if lanky streak of piss at Burn, it's like a few people went, it's like, just stick them all together, let them all have a little like whinge and a joke up in the gods where no one can hear them. But yeah, totally agree. It's been noticeable this season, and there's been lots of like things thrown about, like, oh, well, you know, expectations gone up and everything else. But yeah, I think there's still an appetite for an atmosphere at St. James's Park. It is just a bit scattered. Again, like, I was sat in the east stand and you could hear pockets singing up next to the away fans. That still happens. You can see it, pockets singing from the kind of the big corner. What do you call that? Is that still the family enclosure? Anyway, there's pockets. So if, like you say, if you stick them all together, you're suddenly going to have 15,000 people again singing at the same time. But yeah, generally speaking, I get it. It was freezing cold. It was hailstone, and I was in the east stand. There's not enough cover. The rain and sleet were in my face. So I can understand why people around me weren't singing necessarily. On the conditions, by the way, sorry, I'm jumping around a bit, but I thought we handled them really well. And yeah,
By not having the ball.
If you compare it to Dortmund, which was similar in terms of weather and kind of dampened the crowd, it dampened the air, the way we played a little bit, I thought we handled the occasion much better in that sense. So we've had a bit of a wet weather training, so to speak.
Really quickly then, just in terms of context for the rest of the season and maybe on the review part of this game on Patreon later, the lads will touch on this, but if you look at the last six fixtures, it's 3 wins, 1 defeat, 2 draws in the league. If you look at the last 10 fixtures, it's 3 defeats, a couple of draws, and 5 wins. It's not bad in terms of how chaotic those games have been. Yeah, the fixtures have been easier, the fact that there's players been come back from injury. But in terms of the rest of the season, Newcastle, that graphic went round for ages, did at the start of the season, about, you know, ranking who has the hardest fixtures. Well, I haven't seen an equivalent graphic for the remaining games, but I promise you Newcastle have got the easiest fixtures. They just do. The hardest away game, they've got one away game against a top 10 side, and it's Man United, which is, as we've proved already this season, a surmountable challenge. And then at home, it's only 2 top 10 sides in Brighton and Spurs, who are both, again, beatable. The rest is all bottom half sides. So my final question to you, lads, let's go around the table and start with you, Kyle, and Audie and Si, is it's just one win, but again, looking at the overall picture, it's a positive movement in the last 6 games, last 10 games, all comps. Where do you think we're going to finish?
It's a tough one because I feel like there's a gap between sixth and like a group of teams that we're in. So I'd like to think if we finish the season well, we might be able to catch Man United, who knows? But I'd be happy with seventh and hopefully a final.
But where do you think we'll finish? Not what you're happy with. Where do you think we'll finish? That's what I'm interested in.
Seventh. I'll say seventh. I'll be positive.
Yeah, well, I'm going to agree with Kyle. I think we're going to finish seventh. I didn't before yesterday. I do now. Maybe one win has changed my whole outlook on life. But I think we're probably going to finish seventh. I think we would actually have gone up again, but West Ham scored 2 goals in injury time to get 3 points at Goodison. Sorry, Everton. So I think probably seventh is where we'll finish. I think it's potential that we could catch Man United, but I think things would have to fall apart even more than they have done over the past like 6-8 months at Man United. Now
we've got Man City the day, so
yeah, but they have.
We're 4 points behind them, and we will be 4 points behind them by the end of today.
I think the knock-on effect is, again, is that the win yesterday means that the gloss of the FA Cup draw being taken away from us, like, and, you know, everyone kind of possibly seeing the worst possible outcome from that, like, now everyone can turn their head, right, well, okay, well, we could still finish seventh or whatever in the league, and then the FA Cup becomes a free hit. You can go to City, do your best. If you get beat, you get beat. If you don't, need it. Obviously, it's a big game, but Chelsea away next, and that's the next thing to concentrate on, because if we beat them, that opens up a sizable gap between us and most of the teams around us, actually. Like, so that could be a massive result for us.
If we go to Chelsea and win next week, that's a big if, but, you know, we should have beat them in the League Cup. If we win that game, then, like I say, you're going to the Etihad with some semblance of confidence that we can get something out of the game, and with a bit of time to prepare as well. I think we can catch Man United. I think if we can get a bit of a run together, like you say, those fixtures, there's not really any excuse not to win the vast majority of them. Chelsea's probably a good measuring post for, was this a one-off or are we good again? And if we beat Chelsea or put in the kind of performance that could win and get a result, are you confident that you can take that into the remaining fixtures and get a real return? The reason that pack is so close is because everyone's inconsistent this season, and Man United are part of that as well. The other teams above them are probably a bit too far. Even Villa, whose form isn't going to be as good this side of Christmas, they're still like 15 points ahead of us. Like, we're just not going to catch them.
Too much.
Spurs as well. So it is that sixth is probably the absolute highest we can finish it. I don't think it's impossible. Seventh seems more realistic, and probably I would put money on a seventh now. I think that's absolutely achievable. I think we are the best of the rest. Man United, I want to and think we can catch them, but, you know, they might turn their form around as well. Who knows? But that is definitely achievable to get 4 more points than Man United between now and the end of the season. So why not? Because we'll probably need that if we go out the FA Cup. We're going to need to finish sixth to not have a massive meltdown about the season being a disappointment in the end.
Yeah, we'll beat Man City, man. It's all good.
Yeah, I think we can finish sixth. Man United can't do what we did to Wolves yesterday. They cannot play a game at home even and allow an XG of less than one. They just concede so many chances. I watched them against Forest midweek. Forest should have won that cup tie convincingly. Man United were the better team for like the last 15 minutes, and that masks a lot of the deficiencies and the bad finishing, good goalkeeping that kept them in the game. If we can continue to improve, get players back, keep players fit, it's a big thing. It's a big if keeping the players fit, by the way, because we all season your brain just thinks, oh, well, he's back, so that's okay. Well, Kieran Trippier goes off injured. We don't know how bad it is, and as well as Tino Livramento did, Trippier would still be a huge miss. Alexander Isak staying fit for every game is an essential. So there's still so much that could go against Newcastle, but if Newcastle can, like you said earlier, already get Nick Pope back, if they can continue to keep the opposition out like they did yesterday, I think they'll catch Man United. I think they'll be better than Man United. But there's so many ifs. I just want to enjoy it. Let's just see where we are at the end of the season. Newcastle need to keep playing well. They need to keep improving. They need to keep winning games. I never have been a sack off the league and worry about next season thing. That is not the way football works, in my opinion. But pre-game yesterday, when that team comes out, people are up in arms. People are worried. Newcastle smash Wolves 3-0 at home, and actually how and the lads do know what they're doing. So maybe we just need to kind of take each game as it comes and see where we end up. But I think Newcastle got a great chance of definitely finishing seventh, if not sixth, if the luck goes our way in terms of injuries and performances and all that kind of stuff. We leave it there. Thanks so much for listening and watching. We'll be back with another one of these through the week, because we do two free shows a week now. So speak to you all then. Reminder that you're going to get loads more content from us on this stuff on our Patreon platform. There's a link in the description to this podcast. Come and join us. It keeps this free show alive and going. So thanks to all our brilliant patrons who support us. Thanks to the rest of you for watching or listening, True Faith. And thanks to you guys around the table with me for taking part in this discussion. Speak to you all very soon. Bye-bye. This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the £4 pint on match day. That's all Newcastle home games and any televised Newcastle fixture. The offer applies from midday until midnight on all draft beers. Be gamble aware, over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware, and for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.